Israeli forces once again opened fire on civilians awaiting aid in Gaza, killing and injuring dozens as the Palestinian death toll tops 30,300. Several Israeli forces are killed and their military equipment destroyed as Palestinian fighters carry out more retaliatory operations across Gaza. And Israeli protesters hold thousands-strong demonstrations clashing with the regime's forces and demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Netanyahu's cabinet. Thank you for joining us. Now, the ongoing Israeli genocidal campaign in the Gaza Strip keeps taking a heavy toll on civilians, with scores killed in the regime's attacks. For the second time in less than 48 hours, Israeli troops open fire on Palestinians waiting for aid in Gaza City, killing one and injuring dozens. At least 11 civilians were also killed in an Israeli airstrike that targeted a tent for displaced people in Rafah. Dozens of civilians were killed in Israeli strikes on Khan Yunis and Deir al-Balah in southern and central Gaza. Israeli forces committed 10 massacres during the past day. The death toll from Israel's onslaught on Gaza since early October has surpassed 30,300, most of them women and children. More than 70,000 others have also been injured, while thousands more remain unaccounted for. Now, to talk more on this, we are joined by Mr. Scott Bennett, former U.S. Army Psychological Warfare Officer from San Francisco. Now, Mr. Bennett, for the second time in less than 48 hours, Israeli troops opened fire on Palestinians waiting for aid in Gaza City, killing one and injuring dozens. Now, at least 11 also were killed in Israeli strikes that targeted a tent. Now, before that, we saw more than 115 killed in the Flower Massacre as the starving, defenseless, unarmed civilians were seeking food aid. Now, how and why? It's kind of hard to wrap your head around that.
It is, because it's nothing but pure evil. I just returned from Moscow and several conferences, and I can tell you Russian people and the Russian government stand with the Palestinians and so many other nations and their ambassadors that came to Moscow and stood side by side with the Palestinians. It's something to behold. This is the worst war crime and crime against humanity that we have witnessed, I think, since mankind has existed on planet Earth, which tells me evil has run amok. And the sources of evil, of course, are the United States and Israel. The United States, because it's backing this genocide, it's supporting this genocide with political, economic, and military sustenance to commit murder. And it's nothing less than murder. I am horrified and disgusted that the world's nations, aside from a few, like Russia, Iran, and others, but the vast majority of the world's nations really haven't risen up and rescued these poor Palestinians as they need to, as they should, as God demands. So I think Israel is destroying itself, of course. Many American political commentators and military men have come to the same conclusion. This is Israel committing suicide. And I think it's only a matter of time before you see the complete implosion of the Israeli regime and Netanyahu being executed as the war criminal that he is.
And now, Mr. Bennett, these people have been starved, denied water, electricity and gas. They've been bombed by planes, tanks, drones, snipers, and they've been kidnapped, raped, tortured and imprisoned. So what does it take for the international community, the UN, the Security Council, neighboring Arab countries to stop these massacres?
Well, it certainly requires the people of these nations, who are overwhelmingly standing with Palestine, the people of Australia, the people of Canada, the people of the United States, the people of Britain and Germany and elsewhere. They are all rising up against this with uttermost disgust and contempt for the Israelis. No one remembers anything about October 7th anymore. And in fact, no one remembers or cares about the Holocaust claims and allegations that the Israelis have made since World War II. Every single thing that the Israelis have tried to throw at the rest of mankind in a guilt trip has been forgotten in this bloodbath. And that's nothing less than what it is. It is an absolute bloodbath. And I think the people of these nations are disgusted and horrified and want nothing to do with Israel. They would rather see a complete economic boycott of every product, every single element ever being given to Israel stop. So I think we're going to see the world's people overthrowing their or changing their political leaderships out of demands that the blood of these crimes are not laid upon the children of Europe or the Americas or Asia or anywhere else. This is something to behold. The entire world's population is standing against Israel because this is a horrific crime. The leaders, the political leaders that are bribed or threatened or coerced or intimidated or in any way compromised by Mossad, Shin Bet, taking videotapes of them and compromising positions or other ways of political manipulation, which we know the Jewish Israeli Zionists are experts at, especially in America, where they have controlled the majority of the American Congress. That's why you see the ridiculous, godless fools in the American Congress incessantly flagellating proclaiming Israel is you know, an American ally. It's not. Israel is the enemy of the United States. It is the enemy of Christians. It's the enemy of Muslims. It's the enemy of every decent human being on planet Earth, because no human being could commit these acts. These are acts of demonic possession coming from the seed of Satan and the synagogue of Satan. That's who these people are. And the sooner every nation turns away from them as the demonic beasts that they are, the sooner you will have a complete fixing of this and turning away. But we have to pray that God intervenes, pray that he unites the people against this, and pray that he delivers the Palestinians through this suffering. And I know God is faithful and he will. It is just a terrible time that we're in.
There you have it, Mr. Scott Bennett, former U.S. Army psychological warfare officer from San Francisco. Mr. Bennett, thank you for your time, sir. Now, continuing with the rest of the news, Palestinian fighters are putting up stiff resistance to Israeli forces in Gaza as fighting on the ground rages on. The military wing of the Hamas resistance movement said its fighters blew up a booby-trapped house that resulted in the deaths or injury of at least seven regime soldiers. In Khan Yunis, Al-Ghassan Brigade said the group was also able to seize an Israeli Skylark drone in Gaza City. Israel confirmed the deaths of three soldiers in the Gaza Strip. It also said 14 others were injured, six of them seriously. The regime says 245 of its troops have been killed since it launched its ground invasion of Gaza in late October. Palestinian groups, however, say the regime is intentionally hiding the real number of casualties amongst its forces to avoid public anger. The Islamic Jihad resistance movement has warned the Israeli Prime Minister over the regime's post-war scheme. The spokesman for military wing of the Islamic Jihad said the future of the Gaza Strip will only be determined by the resistance movements, not Israel. Abu Hamza said the end of war in Gaza will be the prelude to the complete destruction of the Israeli regime. He reiterated the group's readiness to continue the fight with Israel as long as it takes. The comments come as Israel plans to control and occupy Gaza after a possible truce there. Abu Hamza also called on Arab and Muslims to provide Palestine with weapons. He urged all Palestinians to mobilize against Israel in the first day of the holy fasting month of Ramadan. Meanwhile, thousands of Israeli protesters have rallied in Tel Aviv demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Several protesters were detained after clashing with the regime's forces, who used tear gas to disperse the demonstrators.
I'm against the government which behaves like the worst fascist that ever been. They studied everything that Germany did to us. We are doing now to the Palestinians.
Protesters also called for holding snap elections. They also demanded the release of Israeli captives held by Palestinian resistance groups. Also, thousands of Israelis led by the families of the captives marched to the occupied Al-Quds demanding a truce deal. Israel's premier has been under fire for putting his political interests in Gaza before the lives of the captives. Netanyahu is embroiled in a series of scandals. His charges, amongst others, include fraud and breach of trust. This has prompted protesters to take to the streets almost every weekend to call for his immediate resignation. Thousands of people are taking to their streets across the world to protest against the war in Gaza and to demand an end to Israel's genocide. Our correspondents filed us the following reports from Rome and Paris. Let's take a look.
Italian cities were the scene of rallies on Saturday in solidarity with Gaza and in condemnation of Israel's inhuman attacks against Palestinian civilians. Rome, Florence, Pisa, Syracuse, Grosseto. For the umpteenth time since early October, tens of thousands of people across Italy took to the streets of their respective cities to express their anger at the Italian government for unconditionally supporting the Israeli regime and at the international community for its complicity in Gaza genocide.
Today, more than ever, international law is just an abstract set of norms which prevails over humanity. Millions of people have died since the Sykes-Picot Accord over 100 years ago, and we're still arguing over the fact that Palestine is a state or not.
We'll go down in history as those who silently supported the genocide period.
Italy has not condemned Israel for the killing of unarmed Palestinians collecting aid in Gaza in an attack that killed more than 100 people on Thursday. However, Rome has called on the Israeli regime to investigate the incident and bring the perpetrators behind the aid massacre to justice.
The Italian police crackdown on students during Palestine solidarity demonstrations in the past weeks has sparked outrage across Italy. Student collectives are at loggerheads with Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and police over the rise in attacks against students.
The government and police repression has revealed the bare truth. Our country is a democracy only on paper. Ours are simply the democracies of double standards and deception. We have been attacked during our protests for peace in Ukraine, and we are attacked today. We perfectly know how democracies work in Western countries.
Thousands of artists, curators and critics have signed an open letter calling on the Venice Biennale, one of the world's largest contemporary visual art exhibitions, to exclude the Israeli National Pavilion from this year's art exhibition due to the brutal assaults against the civilians in Gaza. However, Italy's culture minister has firmly backed Israel's participation. Max Civili, Rome.
Across France, supporters of Palestine marched to denounce Israel's constant atrocities and war crimes during their latest invasion of Gaza. The world has been stunned by what's been dubbed the Flower Massacre, the death of over 100 Palestinians and the wounding of nearly 800 others after Israeli troops opened fire on civilians waiting for food.
We are here to ask for sanctions and to expose the hypocrisy of those who say they were shocked by the killing of people starving that were getting humanitarian aid, but at the same time don't do anything to stop the genocide.
Some 600,000 people in Gaza, or 25% of the population, are currently at risk of famine.
The French Foreign Ministry said the shootings were unjustifiable and backed a call for an independent investigation by the United Nations. French President Emmanuel Macron demanded truth, justice, respect for international law, and called for an immediate ceasefire.
In the Western world, which is and remains accomplice with the Israeli genocide, but a slight change in the tone of all those Western leaders, including Emmanuel Macron. Remember that a few months ago, Macron was proposing a military coalition to fight the Palestinian resistance in Gaza.
Il a deux visages.
Macron is two-faced.
It is only since the International Criminal Court announced that they would investigate Israel that Macron began to say just a few words which were not in total support of Israel. He continues to give arms to Israel and is as complicit as the leaders in Tel Aviv.
Many marchers carried signs of deceased United States soldier Aaron Bushnell, who set himself on fire at the Israeli embassy in Washington after declaring that he will no longer be complicit in genocide. After the start of Israel's invasion of Gaza, France imposed a nationwide ban on pro-Palestinian demonstrations around the country. Activists were forced to endure mass arrests, a record number of fines, and the infamous brutality of France's police. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Thousands of Austrians have taken to the streets of the capital, Vienna, to protest against the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Waving Palestinian flags, the demonstrators marched to the House of the European Union and the Parliament building. They chanted slogans including Free Palestine and Hands Off Rafah. Protesters called for an immediate ceasefire and the delivery of humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip. With that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Palestinian coalition has called for a total energy embargo on the Zionist regime. The group is calling for trade unionists, environmental groups, and human rights organizations to stop fuel exports to Israel. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Oil Routes, a coalition of Palestinian organizations, has called for a total energy embargo on the Zionist regime until it holds its war on the Gaza Strip. Launched recently, the Global Energy Embargo has called for organizations, workers, and environmental activists to stop all energy exports to Israel until it puts an end to the genocide and its regime of apartheid and ethnic cleansing against the Palestinian people. The campaign is working with a team of researchers to analyze energy flows to Israel and identify choke points in its supply chain. In addition to halting fuel imports. The coalition is also demanding an end to the Zionist regime's gas exports to Europe. Citing the Zionist regime's continuing impunity following the International Court of Justice ruling to proceed with South Africa's case, charging the regime with genocide, a coalition spokesperson told Middle East Eye, "We are currently at a time where it takes more than just an ICJ ruling to actually enforce the kind of measures we need." The campaign builds on obvious calls from the Palestine General Federation of Trade Unions, PGFTU, to stop arming the Zionist regime. The fabricated regime of Israel, with almost no domestic crude oil production last year, imported around 300,000 barrels per day of crude. Israel's biggest source of oil is from the Republic of Azerbaijan, with $300 million imported in January. The crude exports are shipped from Turkey's Mediterranean port of Ceyhan. Charlotte Rose, a researcher from the campaign group Disrupt Power, a member of the coalition, told MEE, "At a state level, there are concerns around the infeasibility of an energy embargo because of the way the U.S. would support supply in other areas. But what we are trying to show through research and work with different movements is what that can look like from below." The coalition is working with an expanding global network of workers and campaign groups to target fuel exports to Israel, including mine workers in Colombia, the largest exporter of coal to Israel. In a statement, the workers highlighted the link between the export of metals, minerals, and fuels to Israel and the Zionist regime's role in providing training and equipment to paramilitaries responsible for murdering trade unionist. In the United States, the coalition has connected with the campaign group Chevron Out of Palestine, who staged a 500-strong rally outside the company's refinery. According to the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement, the fossil fuel giant is the main international actor extracting fossil gas claimed by the Zionist regime in Eastern Mediterranean. The coalition is also working with journalists and climate groups in Europe to raise awareness around the Zionist regime's gas exports into the EU, which has become a major importer of the Zionist regime's gas to plug shortages left after the Russia-Ukraine crisis. Following the stalled construction of the Eastern Mediterranean pipeline, which would connect the EU gas network with reserves in the Eastern Mediterranean, including some in offshore Israel, the EU turned to shipping the Zionist regime's gas from Egyptian terminals. The imports have continued through the Zionist regime's ongoing assault on Gaza, with Bloomberg reporting that two liquefied natural gas LNG vessels left Egypt and docked in Belgium and Italy in October. Rose told MEE, "The EU was receiving gas through the genocide. This is through a series of pipeline infrastructures that have been set up over the last decade between Egypt and Israel and then transported to European terminals." In June 2022, the EU, Egypt, and the Zionist regime signed a memorandum of understanding to allow significant exports of Israeli gas to Europe and to encourage EU companies to invest in the Zionist regime's gas fields. In 2023, the fabricated regime of Israel awarded gas exploration licenses to Italy's Eni, British Petroleum, and Dana Petroleum to explore for natural gas off the regime's Mediterranean coast. Rose told MEE, "Without this kind of support and without this idea of Israel becoming a form of diversification for the EU gas problem, it wouldn't really have political and financial power that it does. The EU movement is really behind on that, whether it's the climate movement or other social movements. That's why we started doing this scoping exercise and mobilizing to push groups to be more vocal on this.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here is a thought-provoking saying from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, on the salvation of mankind in the end times. The world will not come to an end until a man from my progeny and of my name shall be master of the world. When you see a green ensign coming from the direction of Khorasan, then join them, for the Imam of God will be with the standards and will be called Al-Mahdi.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, both be physically fit and spiritually fit. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So welcome to A to Z. We're talking about this Islamic lifestyle, of course, something that will bring comfort and ease to our very fast-paced life in this modern day in which we just seem to be surrounded by troubles and trials and tribulations and stress and anxiety. Well, one of the things that's really important when we're talking about Islamic lifestyle, well, primarily it breaks down into two aspects. One is to be physically fit, and the other one is to be spiritually fit. Now, of course, because of the modern era in which we live in, we have a lot of concepts in this modern era which unfortunately are very materialistic and individualistic and utilitarian when it comes, you know, to their essence. So one of the things that, you know, this so-called post-Renaissance man has come up with is this idea of physical fitness. Now, why do they emphasize so much, physical fitness? Well, it's because they only can look at the physical aspect of a human being. These various different post-Renaissance theories, they only look at the material aspect, the physical body. And Islam, of course, being a comprehensive religion, which covers all of the possible bases that are necessary for the perfection of a human being, well, we find that, yes, the physical fitness and the physical aspect of a human being is quite emphasized. It is important, and it is known as one of the blessings. And so to eat healthy, to be healthy, you know, to exercise in an adequate and appropriate manner, to take care of this body which Allah has gifted to us, you know, and the various different things that comes about with being physically fit. These are things which Islam really emphasizes, but Islam also emphasizes the other side of the coin, of course, which is spiritual fitness. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about how when it comes to Islamic lifestyle, we both have to take into consideration being physically fit and being spiritually fit. Now, of course, we know a lot about being physically fit because of this very post-Renaissance theories that, you know, specifically want to focus only on the material aspect of a human being. And really, when you study into the phenomenon, you will realize that many of the problems that have come about in the, you know, modern Western world are precisely because they have a tendency to only focus on the material aspect of human being. So they end up ignoring the spiritual aspect of this lifestyle, this comprehensive lifestyle. And of course, when you ignore an aspect of a human being, well, it causes stress and anxiety and tension. And in reality, it causes a disbalance. And that disbalance is what we see, which is happening across the world with human beings. Now, this spiritual aspect is something that Islam also highly emphasizes, and perhaps in certain places it can be said that Islam overemphasizes the spiritual aspect of a human being, because yes, Islam does say that we should take care of the physical body, but the physical body will eventually remain here. It is the spiritual body and the spiritual aspect of a human being which continues on to the next life. And this is where, for example, the salah, the daily prayers, the fasting, the khums, the charity, the sadaqah, this promotion of doing good things, this prevention of doing evil things, the various different moral and ethical virtues, and these good qualities, right? Staying away from evil habits, submission to carnal desires, and these kind of bad things which really destroy our spiritual fitness. And of course, there's many, many different books that have been written about this subject of how to be spiritually fit in Islam. But of course, we have to end the program talking about Islamic lifestyle with this, that yes, we should focus on our physical aspect and being physically fit, but we must also spend a lot of time and a lot of effort, you know, in being spiritually fit in order to achieve that Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Abu Ramadan and his family.
Part 1.
The sun shone to announce the beginning of a new day. It was the 13th day of the war on the Gaza Strip, on the 20th of July 2014, the 28th of Ramadan, the fasting month for Muslims. Abu Ramadan Yassin and his family were at the sheltering school for those who were displaced from their homes. They got back to their house from the school in Al Zaytun neighborhood, south of Gaza City.
The situation is forced on us. I shall remind you of what I said a while ago. No giving up, no despair, and no devastation. We will say goodbye to our martyrs, build our homes, plant trees in our streets. We will send our martyrs to heaven, whether they are children, old men, or young. We will send them to heaven, then come back to resistance. This is the equation that should be dominant.
Why should you hear or watch the news?
Our families and children are being killed. We should know the news about where they bomb. We should know about the houses and the numbers of martyrs and the children who are dying. Those are our children, hearts, eyes, brothers and families. We should see the fighters who defend us and defend our grace and dignity.
We have been watching TV for 13 days. We watched the massacres, the killing and the bombardments. They kill children, men, women and old men. They kill people when they go anywhere, either to pray or buy food.
Do not allow anybody to use this logic to say that we can live peacefully with Zionists. You know what should be done with those who say this, or those who want us to live next to them.
There is no water or power supply. We cannot live like the rest of humans. And there is war, destruction, killed and torn people in the streets. The army bombed the children on the beach and destroyed our houses.
Allah is sufficient for us against the Arab countries that refuse to support the Muslims. They are supporting the Americans and the Israelis. Aren't we Muslims? Allah is sufficient for us.
After the power outage, Omer Ramadan went to the kitchen to figure out a way to prepare breaking the fast meal for the family, despite the severe lack of ingredients. As for Abu Ramadan, he was out in the market looking for any available ingredients.
I am going to the market to buy some vegetables to break the fast for the children. I hope we find it open.
You know the way there, and people feel afraid of going to their farms and collecting vegetables. Most of the vegetables we have come from the south, and people feel afraid of coming to the Gaza City.
No one went to his land because they feared to be bombed in their lands or houses. The market is closed. The market is closed. There are no vegetables. I don't know what to do. You think you can manage by anything at the house? Okay, goodbye.
I am frying vegetables. I'm making fried potatoes and eggplants to break our fast with them. Today, my husband went to the market and found it closed because of the war. I am preparing food now using what I found in the house.
Abu Ramadan returned home to help his wife prepare the fast-breaking meal.
Arabs are watching us on TV. During that, they are cooking everything. Chicken, sheep, mandi, and other things. But what are we cooking? We are cooking potato and eggplants to break our fast. We are frying them to prepare our breakfast. We are listening to the news of our land, houses and children. We are being destroyed while Arab countries are just watching us and watching series and movies. See how the water supply is. There is no water in the tanks. The water supply is weak and cannot go up to the tanks.
This is how Abu Ramadan and his wife prepare the meal in their house. As for the families that stay at the school, they only have a small electric device they use for cooking.
The Israeli occupation started firing by tanks. We could not sleep that night. Allah is sufficient for us. They kill our neighbors and destroy the houses on them. What can I say? I'm frying potato in the school. We have high morale and our men and fighters are strong, thank God. If we have the weapons, we will liberate Al-Quds. God willing, we will pray there. The food I'm preparing is fried potato and some salad. Thank God for everything. What shall we do?
My name is Camelia Kohail. My family consists of 5 members, my husband, 3 children and I. We were having breakfast when the area behind the house was hit. After a while, the missile hit the house itself. The kitchen, bedroom and living room were all damaged. Nothing remained in the house. It was all destroyed. The tin fell on my son and he is injured now. He is in pain because of his head. I have no other place to go, so now my children and I are homeless. I hope there will be a ceasefire or something. I have no place to stay at and nobody is helping us. The entire Arab world is just watching us.
Camelia lost her entire house and settled with her children in a sheltering school. As for Abu Ramadan and his family, they have their own 2-story house, ground floor and another upper floor. The house got hit by Israeli occupation drones, which caused huge damage in the upper floor, making it unlivable.
I was breaking the fence with my wife, and after we were done eating, she took away the leftovers and went to wash the dishes. She came back here while I was watching TV. I was watching the news about what was going on in our country and what happened to people.
I was standing near the window when the missile hit the house. With the explosion, I fell on the floor and could not see my daughter or my husband. I did not think I was home, but I thought I was at school, and the stones were falling on us.
We flew off the mattresses, and I was moved from here to there. My daughter fell here. Something like fire entered the house and exploded. It was a missile. I got up looking for my wife and daughter and found them here. My daughter was hidden, injured and bleeding. We all became wounded.
The ambulance took us. My daughter and I were injured and shrapnel hit my husband in his back. Look at this. How could we become like this? We should live this life.
If we had remained here for more 10 minutes, we would have been killed. We would have been torn of glass and of the rocket and its fragments. Is that a part of any religion? What did we do? Is that because we demand our rights? Or we demand our homeland? Or we defend our dignity? What was the crime we committed? Why did they come to our land? Why? Look at the missile. What did we do to deserve being hit by this? Is that because we are demanding our rights?
Look at this destruction, the guest room. There is glass, dust, and the missile powder. The decoration of the ceiling fell down. I was going to have a shower and thank God that I didn't have one. Look at the bathroom. how it was destroyed, and even the door. There is nothing good in the house. How would we live here? See how the door was broken? It was completely destroyed.
Allah is sufficient for us.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
A Palestinian woman who was abducted by Zionist regime forces from a school in the Gaza Strip recalls her harrowing experience in detention. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East I wrote, sexual abuse, beatings, yelling, deprivation of food, lack of medical care, and psychological torment. This was life in the Zionist regime detention for Ameneh Hussein. The Palestinian mother of three was abducted by the Zionist regime forces from her place of refuge in the war-torn Gaza Strip in late December. For over 40 days, she was held in unimaginable conditions. She is one of the hundreds of Palestinian women, girls, men, and elders who have been arbitrarily detained by invading Israeli regime troops throughout the ongoing assault. They are held in incommunicado with the Zionist regime troops, taking them to unknown locations and providing no information about their whereabouts. Hussein was one of the lucky few who made it out. The following account is based on an interview she gave to the Middle East Eye, in which she recalls her harrowing experience in the Zionist regime's detention. Ameneh Hussein lived in Gaza City with her two daughters, aged 13 and 12, and her son, aged 6. 4 days after the war started on October 7th, her sister joined them in the house after her home was bombed. For nearly a month, they lived under the horrifying sounds of relentless nearby air strikes. The city, home to nearly 1 million people before the war, had come under a bombing campaign seen as among the most destructive in recent history, proportionally causing more damage than that of the Allied bombing of Germany in the Second World War. Desperate for a sense of safety, Amina Hussein left with her three children to take shelter at a school in Gaza. But that wasn't enough. Hussein told MEE, "The army kept obsessively calling my mobile phone and asking everyone to leave the school," she said. "I gathered my children and went seeking refuge at a school in the central Gaza Strip in the Nusayrat area, but it was so unbelievably crowded that we couldn't find a place to stand up, let alone sit or sleep. I ended up walking around the schools, looking for a safe place for my children until we found a school to stay in at the Al-Waraj refugee camp. I stayed there for the next 8 days. On the 9th day, the school was bombed by the Israeli army, although they knew it was sheltering displaced women, children, and the entire families. Thank God, my children and I survived the bombing. Next, I sought shelter at another school." Displaced multiple times in less than 2 months, Amina Hussein was relieved to finally find a suitable shelter in the central Gaza Strip. But her worst nightmare hadn't started yet. Less than a month after arriving at the latest school, which MEE is not naming to protect the identity of Hussein, the Zionist regime troops arrived. They viciously broke in at 2:30 after midnight, ordering everyone to leave the school. They attacked everyone. The soldiers took the boys out and stripped them naked. They dragged all the men out with their boxers. We stayed like this until 10 in the morning. At around 3 p.m., the soldiers told the women to take their children and leave, ordering them to head south. Speaking through a microphone, they said each woman could take only one bag and her children. "I tried to gather all the food cans I could and take the most necessary things for our survival and leave." As women began to exit the school, some of them were stopped. Amina Hussein was among them. She said, "The soldiers asked for my ID and took me along with 9 other women. I didn't know any of them, as they were from Al-Waraj while I am from Gaza. A masked man pointed at me and the soldier called my name and asked me to enter a tent, claiming there is a doctor there who wishes to speak briefly." Comfort her children, Amina Hussein said she was going to get them food and water from the tent. But when she entered, an Israeli female officer was waiting for her inside. There were no doctors. "Remove everything," the officer said, speaking in Arabic. Undressed, Amina Hussein was searched from head to toe. When she didn't find anything, she asked me to dress up and I thought I was being released. When suddenly I felt the soldier behind me sticking a gun to my back and screaming at me to walk. "Where am I going?" I asked the Zionist regime troop. And he replied by telling me to shut up and continue walking until he put me inside a big van with other women inside, Amina Hussein said. "He handcuffed me, hit me with his weapon, and tried to hand me my ID card. It was dark. I couldn't see anything, and I couldn't catch it. So he hit me with his weapon again and gave it to me." The van then set off for a long drive.
Eventually, Amina Hussein was taken to a small room along with the 8 other women abducted with her, as well as 4 more. All 13 were put in a dark small room, which looked like a cage where animals are kept. According to Amina Hussein, she said there were thin mattresses in the cages with some blankets, but no pillows. It was like sleeping on the cold floor. We were kept handcuffed the whole time. The bathrooms were all filthy and we were afraid of getting sick just from using the bathroom. There were no running water. You walk around with a bottle of water that is for drinking and washing. The girls tried to help and support one another. We wanted to pray, but there was no water for pre-prayer ablution, so we used soil instead. For food, they brought a small amount each day, which was barely enough for one person. We barely had any food. It was extremely difficult to manage without food and water, without clothes and blankets. My body was sick and exhausted. I was beaten and violated. I felt I was going to collapse. I was worried sick about my children, wondering if they were safe, if they had food and water, if they were warm and had someone to care for them. The group of women spent 11 days in this facility, during which Amina Hussein was taken for interrogation twice and experienced no less traumatizing. Amina Hussein recalled, "They asked me many questions about my family, my husband, and my siblings. The soldiers kept threatening to hurt my children, shouting at me that if I don't tell the truth, they will torture and kill my kids. They kept asking about my brothers and sisters. One of my brothers is a lawyer and 2 others are professors, and 1 is a doctor and 1 barber. They are working people. They have no connection to anything else. They kept insisting that they were activists. And when I asked what they meant, they said I knew the answer. During the interrogations, they tied me to a chair, and a female soldier stood next to me, kicking me and shoving me with her weapon to answer properly. They also asked about my social media accounts, and I told them I only had Facebook. They threatened they would keep watching me on it. After suffering in this undisclosed detention facility for 11 days, Amina Hussein was then moved again, this time to a prison.
Over 100,000 people have been killed or wounded in Gaza since October last year. That's about 1 in every 20 man, woman and child in the besieged enclave dead or injured. This is Gaza Under Attack with me, Amina Taylor. Welcome back. The death toll continues to rise after occupation forces killed at least 100 people who were waiting for humanitarian aid in Gaza City. Doctors report a further 150 were injured in the same attack in the Nablusi area in the west of Gaza. In a sign of continuing settlement expansion, the apartheid regime has appropriated 650 acres of Palestinian land, now designating it a part of Male Adamum settlement east of Jerusalem al-Quds. Dozens of UK-based journalists have signed an open letter to the Egyptian and Israeli embassies to allow unfettered access into Gaza and better protection for journalists already working there. In January, Israel's Supreme Court rejected a request from international media citing safety concerns. Meanwhile, in England, voting has opened in the first polls that may well punish both the ruling Conservatives and opposition Labour parties for their pro-genocide stance as pro-Palestine candidates look set to triumph. The US-Israeli bombing of Gaza continues at pace. Since October last year, 30,000 Palestinians have been killed, most of them women and children. So much to get through, and helping me to do just that for this edition of the program in the studio with me, a welcome return for Charles Kelly. Charles.